Good evening, and welcome to In the Eyes of Terror's Creepy Readings. Today, we will be doing readings from the renowned author, H.P. Lovecraft, which will be several short stories and a few poems. So let's begin with the creepy reading. So settle in, grab your warm beverage, and enjoy the read. Poem 1, The Night Gaunts. Out of what crypt they crawl, I cannot tell. For every night I see the rubbery things, black, horned, and slender, with membranous wings. They come in legions on north winds swell, with obscene clutch that titillates and stings, snatch me off on monstrous voyages to gray worlds hidden deep in nightmare's well. Over the jagged peaks of Thok they sweep, hellish of all the cries I try to make. I down the nether pits to the foul lake, where the puffed Shoggoths splash in doubtful sleep. But ho, if only they would make some sound, or wear a face where faces should be found. Story number 1, The Cats of Ulúthar. It is said that in Ulúthar, which lays beyond the river Skye, no man may kill a cat. And this I can barely believe as I gaze upon him who sitteth purring before the fire. For the cat is cryptic and close to strange things which men cannot see. He is the soul of Antiqui Agapis, and bearer of tales from forgotten cities of Muir and Ophir. He is the kin of the jungle lords, and heir to the secrets of hoary and sinister Africa. The Sphinx is his cousin, and he speaks her language, but he is more ancient than the Sphinx, and remembers that which she hath forgotten. In Ulúthar, before even the burgesses forbid the killing of cats, there dwelt an old cotter and his wife, who delighted to trap and slay the cats of their neighbors. Why they did this, I know not, save that many hate the voice of the cat in the night, and take it ill that cats should run stealthily about yards and gardens at twilight. But whatever the reason, this old man and woman took pleasure in trapping and slaying every cat which came near to their hovel. And from some of the sounds heard after dark, many villagers fancied that the manner of slaying was exceedingly peculiar. But the villagers did not discuss such things with the old man and his wife, because of the habitual expression on the weathered faces of the two. And because their cottage was so small and so darkly hidden under spreading oaks at the back of a neglected yard. In truth, much as the owners of cats hated these odd folk, they feared them more. And instead of berating them as brutal assassins, merely took care that no cherished pet or mouser should stray toward the remote hovel under the dark trees. When through some unavoidable oversight a cat was missed and sounds heard after dark, the loser would lament impotently or console himself for thanking fate that it was not one of his children who had thus vanished. For the people of Ulúthar were simple and knew not whence it was all cats came first. One day, a caravan of strange wanderers from the south entered the narrow, cobbled streets of Ulúthar. Dark wanderers they were, and unlike the other roving folk who passed through the villages twice every year. In market places, they told fortunes for silver and bought gay beads from the merchants. What was the land of these wonders, none could tell, but it was seen that they were given to strange prayers, and that they had painted on the sides of their wagons strange figures with human bodies and heads of cats, hawks, rams, and lions. And the leader of the caravan wore a headdress with two horns and a curious disc betwixt the horns. It was in this singular caravan a little boy with no father or mother, but only a tiny black kitten to cherish. The plague had not been kind to him, but had left him this small furry thing to mitigate his sorrow. And when one is very young, one can find great relief in the lively antics of a black kitten. So the boy whom the dark people called Menace smiled more often than he wept as he sat playing with his graceful kitten on the steps of an oddly painted wagon. On the third morning of the wondrous stay in Uluthar, Menace could not find his kitten. And as he sobbed aloud in the marketplaces, certain villagers told him of the old man and his wife, and the sounds heard in the night. And when he heard these things, his sobbing gave place to meditation, and finally to prayer. He stretched out his arms toward the sun and prayed in a tongue no villager could understand, though indeed the villagers did not try very hard to understand, since their attention was mostly taken up by the sky and the odd shapes the clouds were assuming. It was very peculiar, but as the little boy uttered his petition, there seemed to form overhead the shadowy, nebulous figures of exotic things, of hybrid creatures crowned with horn-flanked discs. Nature is full of such illusions to impress the imaginative. That night, the wonders left Uluthar and were never seen again. And the households were troubled when they noticed that in all the village, there was not a cat to be found. From each hearth, familiar cat had vanished. Cats large and small, black, gray, striped, yellow, and white. Old Cronin, the burgomaster, swore that the dark folk had taken the cats away in revenge for the killing of Menace's kitten, and cursed the caravan and the little boy. But Neith, the lean notary, declared that the old cotter and his wife were more likely persons to suspect, for their hatred of cats was notorious and increasingly bold. Still, no one durst complain to the sinister couple, even when little Attil, the innkeeper's son, vowed that he had at twilight seen all the cats in Uluthar and the accursed yard under the trees pacing very slowly and solemnly in a circle around the cottage, as if in performance of some unheard of rite of beast. The villagers did not know how much to believe from so small a boy, and though they feared that the evil pair had charmed the cats to their death, they preferred not to chide the old cotter till they met him outside his dark and repellent yard. So Uluthar went to sleep in vain anger, and when the people awakened at dawn, behold, every cat was back at his accustomed hearth, large and small, black, gray, striped, yellow, and white. None was missing. Very sleek and fat did the cats appear, and sonorous with purring content. The villagers talked with one another of the affair and marveled not a little. Old Cronin again insisted that it was the dark folk who had taken them, since cats did not return alive from the cottage of the ancient man and his wife. But all agreed on one thing, that the refusal of all the cats to eat their portions of meat or drink their saucers of milk was exceedingly curious. And for 2 whole days, the sleek, lazy cats of Uluthar would touch no food, but only doze by the fire or in the sun. It was fully a week before the villagers noticed that no lights were appearing at dusk in the windows of the cottage under the trees. Then the lean Neith remarked that no one had seen the old man or his wife since the night the cats were away. In another week, the burgomasters decided to overcome his fears and call at the strangely silent dwelling as a matter of duty. Though in so doing, he was careful to take with him Shang, the blacksmith, Dull, the cutter of stone, as witnesses. And when they had broken down the frail door, they found only this, 2 cleanly picked human skulls on the earthen floor, and a number of singular beetles crawling in the shadowy corners. There was subsequently much talk about the burgesses. There was subsequently much talk among the burgesses of Uluthar. Zath, the corner, disputed at length with Nith, the lean notary. And Cronin and Shang and Thal were overwhelmed with questions. Even little Attil, the innkeeper's boy, was closely questioned and given a sweetmeat as a reward. They talked of the old Cotter and his wife, of the caravan of dark wanderers, of small Minas and his black kitten, of the prayer of Minas, and of the sky during that prayer, and the doings of the cats on the night the caravan left, and of what was found later in the cottage under the dark trees and the repellent yard. In the inn, the burgesses passed the remarkable law which is told by traders Hathag and discussed by travelers in Nir, that in Ulithar no man may kill a cat. Story number 2, Ex Oblivion. When the last days were upon me, and the ugly trifles of existence began to drive me to madness, like the small drops of water that torturers let fall ceaselessly upon one spot of their victim's body, I loved the erudite refuge of sleep. In my dreams, I found a little of the beauty I had vainly sought in life, and wandered through old gardens and enchanted woods. Once when the wind was soft and scented, I heard the south calling, and sailed endlessly and languorously under strange stars. Once when the gentle rain fell, I glided in a barge down in a sunless stream under the earth till I reached another world of purple twilight, iridescent arbors, and undying roses. And once I walked through a golden valley that led to shadowy groves and ruins, and ended in a mighty wall green with antique vines and pierced by a little gate of bronze. Many times I walked through that valley, and longer would I pause in the spectral half-light where the giant trees squirmed and twisted grotesquely, and the gray ground stretched damply from trunk to trunk, sometimes disclosing the mold-stained stone of buried temples. And always the goal of my fancies was the mighty vine-grown wall with the little gate of bronze therein. After a while, as the days of waking became less and less bearable from the grayness and sameness, I would often drift in opiate peace through the valley and the shadow groves and wonder how I might seize them from my eternal dwelling place, so that I need no more crawl back to a dull world stripped of interest and new colors. And as I looked upon the little gate and the mighty wall, I felt that beyond it lay a dream country from which, once it was entered, there would be no return. So each night in sleep, I strove to find the hidden latch of the gate and the ivied antique wall, though it was exceedingly well hidden. And I would tell myself that the realm beyond the wall was not more lasting merely, but more lovely and radiant as well. Then one night in the dream city of Zaskaran, I found a yellow papyrus filled with the thoughts of dream sagas who dwelt of old in the city, and who were too wise ever to be born in the waking world. Therein were written many things concerning the world of dream, and among them was the lore of a golden valley and a sacred grove with temples, and a high wall pierced with a little bronze gate. When I saw this lore, I knew that it touched on the scene I had haunted, and therefore read long in the yellow papyrus. Some of the dream sagas wrote gorgeously of the wonders beyond the irrepassable gate, but others told of horror and disappointment. I knew not which to believe, yet long more and more to cross forever in the unknown land, for doubt and secrecy are the lures of lures, and no new horror can be more terrible than the daily torture of the commonplace. So when I learned of the drug which would unlock the gate and drive me through, I resolved to take it when next I awoken. Last night I swallowed the drug and floated dreamily into the golden valley and the shadowy groves, and when I came this time to the antique wall, I saw that the small gate of bronze was ajar. From beyond came a glow that weirdly lit the giant twisted trees and the tops of the buried temples, and I drifted so songfully, expectant of the glories of the land from whence I should never return. But as the gate swung wider, and the sorcery of the drug and the dream pushed me through, I knew that all sights and glories were at an end, for in that new realm was neither land nor sea, but only the white void, unpeopled and immantipled space. So happier than I had ever hoped to be, I dissolved again into the native infinite of crystal oblivion from which the demon life had called me for one brief and desolate hour. Section 3 is another poem, The Nightmare Lake. There is a lake in distant Zane, beyond the Wotan haunts of man, where roads along in a hideous state, a spirit dead and desolate, a spirit ancient and unholy, heavy with fearsome melancholy, from which the waters dull and dense, draws vapors cursed with pestilence. Around the banks a mire of clay, sprawled things offensive in decay, and curious birds that reach the shore are seen by mortals nevermore. Here shines by day the searing sun, on glassy wastes beheld by none, and here by night pale moonbeams flow, and the deeps that yawn below. In nightmares only it is told, what scenes beneath these beams unfold. What scenes too old for human sight lie sunken there in endless night, for in those depths their only pace the shadows of a voiceless race. One midnight, redolent of ill, I saw that lake asleep and still, while in the leeward sky there rode a gibbous moon, it glowed and glowed. I saw the stretching marshy shore, and the foul things those marshes bore, lizards and snakes convulsed and dying, ravens and vampires putrefying, all these and the hovering o'er the dead necrophage that on them fed. And as the dreadful moon climbed high, frightening the stars from out the sky, I saw the lake's dull water glow, till sunken things appeared below. There shone unnumbered fathoms down, the towers of a forgotten town, the tarnished domes and mossy walls, weed tangled spires and empty halls, deserted fanes and vaults of dread, and streets of gold uncoveted. This I behold and saw beside, a horde of shapeless shadows glide, a noxious horde which to my glance seemed moving in a hideous dance. Slimy sepulchres that lay beside a never-traveled way, straight from those tombs a heaving rose, the vexed in the water's dull repose, while lethal shades of upper space held at night's sardonic face, sank the lake within its bed, sunk down to caverns of the dead. Till from the reeking new stripped earth curled fetid fumes of noisome birth, about the city nigh uncovered monstrous dancing shadows hovered, when lo there oped with sudden stir the portal of each sepulchre. No ear may learn, no tongue may tell what nameless horrors then befell. I see the lake, the night agrin, that city and things within. Waking, I pray that on that shore that nightmare lake may sink no more. And for our final reading, Halloween in a Suburb. The steeples are white in the wild moonlight, and the trees have a silver glare. Past the chimney high, see the vampires fly, and the harpies of upper air that flutter and laugh and stare. For the village dead to the moon outspread, never shone in the sunset's gleam, but grew out of the deep of the dead year's keep, where the rivers of madness stream down the gulfs to a pit of dream. And chill wind weaves through the rows of sheaves and the meadows that shimmer pale, and comes to twine where the headstones shine, and the ghouls of the graveyard wail, for harvests that fly and fail. Not a breath of the strange gray gods to change, that tore from the past its own, can quicken this hour when the spectral power spreads sleep over the cosmic throne, and looses the vast unknown. So here again stretched the veil and plain, that moon's long forgotten saw, that the dead leap gay, and the pallid ray sprung out of the tomb's black maw to shake in all the world with awe. And all that morn shall great forlorn, and the ugliness and the pest of rose where thick rise, the stones and brick shall some day be with the rest, and brood with the shades unblessed. Then wild in the dark let the lemurs bark, and the leprous spires ascend, for now and old alike in the fold of horror and death are pinned, for hounds of time to rend. Thank you for joining us for another creepy reading. If you would like for your story to be read, you can send us to our email, which is intheeyesofterror@zoho.com, which is in the eyes of terror, which is one word. Zoho is zoho.com. We would like you to label which narrator you would like to be read, me or Crazy Susie. And we'll be continuing reading H.P. Lovecraft throughout the podcasting. I hope you have a good night and all over you are safe. Thank you. We'll scare you later. Bye.